Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Living Your Life by Design, a conversation of self, health, and wealth with the sole purpose of advancing and enhancing the lives of women. And now, your host, certified career consultant, life coach, and author, Kathy Holloway Hill.
Good evening to all my loyal listeners. I'm Kathy Holloway Hill.
And I'm Tony Lamont.
And we welcome you to the Living by Design show. Thank you, everyone, for joining us this evening, everyone that's in the chat room and everyone that's calling in, dialing in, and also everyone that will be listening to the archive download. So we're really excited about the topic this evening. We want to let you know that our call-in number for questions or comments is 646-478-3060. And we have a very interesting show this evening, something I think we've all been touched by at one point in our lives or another, whether it's our own struggle or that of a loved one, and that is the topic of addictions and substance abuse. And, Tony, I am really excited about this topic. I think we're really going to touch a lot of people tonight in one way or the other with this topic.
Yeah, a lot of folks don't really realize that there's so many different kinds of addictions and so many different kinds of things that affect them. And hopefully we'll have an opportunity to deal with some of the reasons why and actually some of the things that we should notice.
Exactly.
I know a lot of folks may not get those warning signs. I mean, I see the warning signs, but maybe we can see some of that and get some of that information this evening.
Right, because this situation not only affects the addict itself, but it also affects many people in the addict's life, their family, their friends, coworkers, just about everyone they come in contact with. So I'm pretty anxious to begin that discussion, and we'll get to that here shortly with Dr. Lisa Larson. I'm really excited about having her with us this evening. But first, Tony, I want to talk about, as you know, you and I have talked about this several times, some of you listening may or may not know, but the Living by Design show is very much involved with another show here on Blog Talk Radio entitled Peas in Their Pods. And this show focuses on the alarming epidemic of missing and exploited African-American children in our country. And I want to inform everyone that Tony and I recently worked on and completed a PSA video, a public service announcement video, that will be posted on YouTube. And we're asking everyone to please visit the site. The video has not been posted yet, but when the video is ready, we will send out an announcement and we'll let everybody know how you can post to the video. But it's a very, very engaging video, and it provides a lot of information, and it directs everyone how to get to the website and the alarming epidemic. And we're very, very excited about that project because this not only will give a voice to peas in their pods as well as the website Saving Our Children, www.savingourchildren.bravehost.com, but it will also ask everyone and put a plea out to everyone to please lend their hands and lend their ears and help us in this cause. So this is something that I'm very, very excited about, and it is our hope that the video will be able to bring more awareness to this situation, and, of course, we would love to recruit as many people as possible to help get the word out there. And, Tony, you could talk a little bit more about the video and when we'll have an idea of when it'll be ready.
Well, I know we'll probably have the video up and ready within the next 24 hours. So, as you said, the notification will go out, and folks will be informed where they can view it and how they can view it. But it is it's an engaging, enlightening, informative video that hopefully will get people engaged in the aspect that this is something that needs to be addressed in every community around the country. And from the listeners that are listening to the show now, from all over the country, and even from what we found out from all over the world, they can do something and do their part in being a part of taking care of this. And it is an epidemic because it is something that's going on in every community. It doesn't matter who you are or where you're from, and particularly in the African-American community, which is a community that when a child goes missing or a child is abducted, the information seems to get out a lot slower. So we definitely
exactly.
want to address that.
That's right. And Peas in Their Pods is doing a wonderful job here on Blog Talk Radio, but we also want to add to that, and as I stated, we want to give a put a video, put a face to the cause. So when we get that finished, we want to make an announcement, and we'll make sure you have all the information you need to visit that video, because we want everyone to, if you, even if you can't lend a hand or lend an ear, at least get the word out, tell 3, 4, 5 of your friends to go visit the video and just take a look at it and visit the website of www.savingourchildren.bravehost.com. So we are very anxious and excited to get that up, and we'll provide more information on that coming up soon. So moving on, just to give you a couple of preview upcoming show topics, next week we're going to be talking to Melanie Tanya Evans to discuss the topic of domestic violence, which is very prevalent in our community today. And she has written two very good books entitled Breaking the Chains of Painful Love and Taking Back Your Power. So those are very good books on that topic. And then the following week, we will be talking to Dr. Debbie Glazier about blended families and step families and how to manage that situation. And Tony, the show topic for that show, I made it, can't we all just get along? Because that is something that we struggle with. I mean, we may find someone that's really special in our lives, and then something happens because we don't get along with their children or their siblings or something. So I think we're going to be able to bring a lot of value with that show. And the topic this evening I'm very excited about as well. Dr. Lisa Larson is a psychologist specializing in addictions and substance abuse and trauma recovery treatment. So I'm really anxious to get to her. But before I bring her on the line, I just want to share with our listeners a public service announcement for a very special show that we have coming up later in the month for our special loyal listeners. And this is just a special preview of something extra nice that we want to do for you guys for being so wonderful to us and so supportive. So I'm just going to give you a little preview of something that will be coming for you, especially for the ladies.
Coming up on the Living by Design show, a special tribute to you, our loyal listener, an evening, an intimate evening, with R&B legend, Mr. Howard Hewitt.
I remember the first time, my day, with you, babe. It was a slow, slow, the lights were so. Time to say goodbye for now. We'll have our second time around. But before we go, there's something I'd like to say. Hey man.
Howard Hewitt, coming to Living by Design.
So yeah, we're going to make that a night to remember. So ladies, get ready, because I'm excited about that myself, so Howard's coming. Okay, well, let's move on, Tony, and we're going to go ahead and introduce our guest for the evening, which is Dr. Lisa Larson, and as I stated, she's a licensed psychologist specializing in addictions and substance abuse and trauma recovery treatment. Dr. Larson has done so much work. She's worked at substance abuse clinics, homeless shelters, community mental health settings, and she's just experienced in so many areas that deal with children situations and adult situations. And I'm going to go ahead and bring Dr. Larson on the line and let her give us a little bit more about herself and some of the work that she's doing. Dr. Lisa, are you on with us?
Yes, good evening. It's nice to be on the air here.
Great.
Thank you for this opportunity.
Oh, no problem at all. We're glad you're able to join us this evening. And my co-host, Mr. Tony Lamont, he's here with us.
Hi, Tony.
Hi there. Glad to have you with us. And I'm really looking forward to this because I've known quite a few people that have had situations and have faced addictions in their lives. And fortunately, they've been able to address them and get the help that they've needed. But I know there's a lot of our listeners that if they've not faced it themselves, maybe they know someone, and this show hopefully will be able to address and help those individuals.
I hope so, too.
Yes, absolutely. So, Dr. Larson, I'm just going to let you kind of go through some of the work you've done, if you don't mind just giving our listeners a little highlight of some of the things you've worked on, just to let our listeners know what some of your experience is.
Sure. Thank you. I have worked at, as you mentioned, homeless shelters, and I've worked for Kaiser in their chemical dependency recovery project up in Vallejo. Most of my experience has been in Northern California because that's where I am. But I've also worked in private practice for the past 4 years, and I've been helping people from adolescents on up, helping them recover from addictions and also from trauma. And sometimes it overlaps. A lot of times people have been traumatized by people they love, feel like they need to take care of themselves by self-medicating. And that's unfortunately all too common, but it doesn't necessarily take a trauma to make someone abuse substances. It's just I've seen a lot of overlap there. So
that's true, and that's one of the questions I have. I want to ask you though, Dr. Lisa, is there a difference in addictions? Because I have heard the term dependence. So what is the difference in drug abuse and drug dependence?
Okay, I'm glad you asked that. It is an important distinction. Substance abuse, when you start noticing that you're having life-damaging consequences as a result of using drugs or alcohol, so you might start to get, driving under the influence arrests, or you might be noticing that your relationships are suffering as a result of using, but you haven't yet developed tolerance, which means that your body is getting used to having the drug in you, and so your liver, to cope with that, makes it so that you need more and more of the substance to get the same effect. And that, so when you start getting into tolerance and withdrawal symptoms, that's when you're into the dependence territory. So both substance abuse and dependency, you're still using, even though you're noticing negative consequences as a result of you using, but by the time you're in dependency, you're already your body is having a hard time processing what you're doing to it, and you're starting to notice more and more physical symptoms as a result of that. And as you use more and more, your world is getting smaller and smaller and more focused on using and recovering from use and getting the drug. So your world becomes centered on the substance, and it kind of pushes everything out. Everything else out, like family and friends, and your job may suffer, your work, you know, all types of things other than the drug suffer as a result of your using.
Right.
Does that make sense?
It does. And okay. I know I have had, several loved ones and people in my life that were very important to me that had addictions, and I never understood what causes addictions. What causes a person to... Because, for instance, a person very close to me had struggled with a gambling addiction, and I'm trying to understand. I know it has something to do with not being able to rationalize and logically think that you're not going to get ahead when you gamble and, you know, you don't really get anywhere. So what causes the addiction to take over the person's logical reasoning skills?
Okay. What happens is there is a change in your brain chemistry when you're using, and it depends on, you know, the neurotransmitter that the drug or substance or activity is acting on. So my understanding is that some of the process addictions or behavioral addictions, like you mentioned, gambling, a lot of it depends on dopamine, which is the pleasure hormone or neurotransmitter. And so once you've kind of experienced that high that you get and the excitement from risking something that big, like, you know, you say you have a large sum of money that you're putting on a horse, say, it changes your brain chemistry, and then it kind of tricks you into thinking that you need that to feel okay after a while. So that's a sort of oversimplification of what happens. But you know, to put it in layman's terms and simplify it, that's sort of what happens. But what creates addiction in people is more than just one thing. You know, it can be a combination of genetics and what you saw your parents do to solve their problems, the availability of the substance or activity. So it's not just one thing. And I think a lot of family members often blame themselves for, you know, creating an addict, or and it's simply not that simple, and it's not that easy to just blame one person, especially when they're blaming you, as a lot of addicts do. Like, they will say, if you didn't nag me so much, I wouldn't have to drink, or, you know, you're driving me to this. But it's not, it's a choice to some extent, and it's a lot of things combined.
Now, Dr. Lisa, I wanted to ask, because you gave, as you said, you know, it was kind of a simplified way of looking at it, but when the abuse turns into the addiction, it becomes, I mean, because we think about addictions, and Kathy used the example of gambling, and some folks, you know, deal with eating issues, but doesn't it basically always turn into a chemical situation, because it happens within your system, it happens within your brain?
I'm not quite sure what you mean by that.
A chemical situation
where they are abusing drugs and alcohol in addition to their process addiction?
If they're using, I mean, we typically think of an addict in many instances, the simple way that they're using drugs or they're using pills or that kind of thing. So you think of the pills and the drugs causing a chemical reaction to your body, and you're becoming dependent on it. But when you have an action, for instance, gambling, as you mentioned, the dopamine, that chemical reaction happens in your brain. So isn't that the same kind of thing? We don't really think of those actions as a chemical reaction, but it really is, and that's what causes you to become an addict, because you have to have that feeling.
That high that you get from placing that bet.
Yeah, I understand now. Thank you. I think there's more to it than that. There's also a lot of times when people get addicted to an action or behavior, there's also a need to kind of escape internal pain or emptiness, and to feel that, you know, it's sort of like a wrong relationship with something outside of themselves to make them feel loved or whole. So it's more than just a chemical thing. It's also a spiritual void, and it's also a psychological process.
Okay.
I don't know if that makes sense to you, but
absolutely.
Okay, good.
Now, Dr. Lisa, is it Can an addict actually quit on their own, whatever their addiction or substance of choice is, can they quit on their own if they've been doing this for a significant amount of time?
I think the odds are against them. I'm sure it happens, but there's a difference between quitting the behavior or the substance and recovering or being sober. And the difference is that when you're in recovery, you're actually learning how to live life on life's terms without the substance or behavior. And that's quite different from just white-knuckling it and trying to live without it, without putting something else in there to support yourself and nurture yourself. So for example, you know, you can quit using, you know, I'll use cigarettes, for example. You can quit that on your own. Your chance of relapse, I think, is quite higher because you haven't figured out how to satisfy whatever was being satisfied without that substance.
Okay.
So that takes education and support, and you know it takes a lot more than just quitting on your own. So I'm sure that people all over the place say, "Oh yeah, I quit this on my own," but then you ask them about the quality of their lives and whether they feel like they really, whether they're thinking about that all the time, and they might still be thinking about it and yearning for it.
Right. Now, I'm going to go to the phone here, Dr. Lisa. I have quite a few callers on the line, and see if we have a caller that has a question. So I'm going to bring area code 208. You're on the line. Do you have a question or a comment? Hello? Area code 208? Okay.
Okay, I have a question for Dr. Larson. Okay, if a person has an addiction, I was always taught that when a person has an addiction, the first sign is admitting that they have a problem. Well, I have a friend that does admit that he has a problem with addiction, but however, he seems to think that his problem is okay because he's been doing it for so long, and he feels like he's handling the situation because it's not causing any stress to anybody, and I don't think that he understands the long-term effects of his addiction.
Mm.
So how do you get the person to understand that if just because you say I have an addiction, you know, doesn't make it okay? What do you do to get the person to actually change that behavior?
Yeah, I think I totally understand what you're saying, because is the person saying it's their recreation, or are they making an excuse because they're not wanting to own up to the fact that it's an addiction?
Well, actually, the person that I know, it doesn't happen to be substance abuse. It happens to be gambling. And the person thinks because they're very successful in what they do, and because they're able to live a certain lifestyle and attain a certain lifestyle, that the addiction is not as prevalent as it would be in someone who wasn't as well off as they were, or as well-to-do, or as educated as they are.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to think that their status makes them above the addiction, so it's okay for them to have an addiction.
That's a good question.
So, yeah, that is a good question. Are they experiencing life-damaging consequences as a result of, what's being negatively impacted?
Is there anything going on in their life, caller, that is, there has to be something going on in their life that is an indication that it is taking a toll. Maybe they're ignoring it or not seeing it.
Well, I think that the person is starting to see the effects financially. However, the person is an ambitious person, and they think, okay, this addiction is starting to affect me financially, but it's not so bad that I have to quit. I've been doing this for 20, 30 years, so if I fall, I can rebuild myself back up again. Instead of saying, you know what, I need to think of ways to help me come back this addiction, they seem to make excuses of why the addiction is okay.
Hmm. Okay.
You know, and so in my situation, I think it's hard for that person to see that your addiction affects everyone around you and affects everything that you do. But, you know, just because they get that ecstatic feeling when they're out doing their, you know, whatever they're addicted to, then they feel like, okay, I'm justified. I'm not hurting anybody. I'm able to pay my bills. But how long will you be able to pay your bills? For gambling and you're spending so much money gambling, you know, will you always be able to handle your bills? Or will
and
one day you wake up?
I'm sorry,
and,
caller. I didn't get your name. What's your name, caller?
My name is Precia. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you. I just wanted to make sure that. And Dr. Lisa, or Lucretia, I think she said her name was.
Yes.
I think she has a very good point because, you know, I've known similar people like that in my life as well. And, you know, she's absolutely correct that sometimes people feel like because their lives are not severely impacted that it's okay. And like she said, you know, they kind of make excuses and they don't really want to own up to it. They may know deep down inside that it's a problem, but they don't think it's a big enough problem to do anything about.
Right, right. And that's one of the hard things about addiction is that sometimes people really have to experience a lot of negative consequences before they can surrender to the fact that they're powerless over what they're addicted to. And they have all kinds of creative thinking of why it's not a problem. And it can be really frustrating to talk to them about it because they have an answer for everything. And so what you might try is to talk to them about how it's affecting you and let them know what you are and are not willing to accept in your life. It's like, you know, I'm powerless over your behavior, but at the same time, this is how you've impacted me, and I'm not willing to tolerate these things. And if you continue to do what you're doing to me, I'm not going to put up with it. And then
well,
you need to stick with that.
How about if their behavior really, it isn't doing anything to you physically or mentally. It's just that you're a friend of the person and you want to see them do well. You know, everyone will want the person in our life, you know, that we consider friends or family or whatever to do well. And you want the person to do well because you're genuinely concerned for the person. But when you talk to the person every day and the person seems to make excuses of why this addiction is okay, that gets kind of frustrating. So do you just back away and let the person have that addiction and let them fall on their face, or do you keep on moving towards helping the person so that they can see this is an addiction and it is not, it hasn't really affected me yet, but it will?
Well, I you don't mind, Dr. Lisa, because I've kind of been in a similar situation, and I just want to let the caller know that, you know, in my experience, I had a very important person in my life that was in something very similar, and you get to the point where you have to back away. I mean, you can be the person's friend and you can support them, but it has to be their decision. And they have to come to the realization on their own that it's time to make a change and it's time to do something different. Because if you keep doing things the same way, you'll keep continuing to get the same result, and they have to understand that.
Right.
That's true. And you know, I know it sounds sort of cruel in a way to let them, as you say, fall on their face. And that's unfortunately, I'm not advocating being heartless and not helping them whatever way you can, but what will happen sometimes is people will start, you know, borrowing money from you and asking more of you than what you're willing to give, because nothing can satisfy this addiction. And so if you're not real careful about your boundaries with the person, you might wind up getting used up and then really resenting the person. So I think stepping away from it to a certain extent is more compassionate in the long run, because you're not winding up resenting them.
And that kind of brings me to another point, you know, because there is a major effect on family members. And can you talk a little bit, Dr. Lisa, about how does the effects of addictions or substance abuse, how does it affect the family members? And what are some of the things that family members go through? And how can you help? What are some of the things, tips you can give for people that are in that position, being a friend or a family member?
Okay, well, it really affects children, as you can imagine. A lot of times children become parentified, which means that they feel like they have to take care of their parents instead of vice versa. And that, again, can create resentment along with a whole host of other mental health symptoms. depression, anxiety. Because if you feel like your parents, which are like your God when you're a child, aren't taking care of things, then it falls on you. And that can really be unsettling, you know, as you're developing as a person. And it can also, basically what happens is as the person who's addicted gets sucked into their addiction, they're less and less responsible for major aspects of their lives, and everyone around them has to pick up the pieces somehow and cope with how it feels to have a semi-absent family member. And so it can really create a lot of stress. And luckily, there's this great resource in almost every community all over the world, and it's called 12-Step Programs, and there's Al-Anon for family members as well as CODA. And so if you find yourself in a situation where you have a close family member and they're going through something like this, you can, you know, go to Al-Anon and get support from other people who are going through the same thing, just like alcoholics can go to AA or, you know, drug addicts can go to NA.
Well, I have another question. In a sense, is the person that's struggling with the addiction, are they in a way selfish because it's all about them and it's not about the people around them? So do they tend to have some selfish traits?
As when they're in the throes of addiction, yes, it can be almost like dealing with a whole other person, you know, very different from who you knew and loved. And it can be really disheartening to see them just give up on life, basically, and do things that are very self-destructive and impulsive and foolish. So yes, while they're in their addiction, it can be very hard to see them do that. And yet at the same time, when they're recovering, a lot of people who are in recovery say, boy, it's really hard to get people's trust back. Well, you know, after you've broken it, people's trust a number of times, yes, they're going to be very reluctant to trust you when you do get in recovery. So it's hard, but it's really wonderful when you see families stick together and work on recovering as a family, and instead of just saying it's your problem, addict, you fix it. And then, you know, because a lot of times as people get sucked into their addiction, people have been helping them do that by, you know, calling in sick for them or, you know, kind of taking up the slack that they're leaving. And so the people around them need to also understand that they might be contributing, you know, in a well-intentioned way to the person's not taking responsibility for themselves.
Now, Dr. Lisa, I wanted to ask because there's
Tony, before you get started, did that answer your question, caller? Caller? Latricia? I guess she must have went away. Hello? Okay. Go ahead, Tony, with your question.
Yes, I was just going to say there seems to be a new attitude from an entertainment side, from a societal standpoint, because I know there are a couple of, they call them reality shows, and I guess they are reality shows, dealing with intervention. And you talked about allowing the person that is addicted to get to that rock bottom place and it, not trying to be cruel. I know as family members and friends, when do you take a look at or the possibility of stepping forward and maybe doing an intervention or saying, look, we can't allow you to do this to yourself anymore? Or do you just, is there a time that you need to do that? I know life or death, of course, is one of those situations, but sometimes it doesn't get that far. Is there a time that you need to say, hey, enough is enough and we've got to step in?
Well, I think it depends on what people are willing to tolerate. And I do think that it's like anything, any health problem, it's better to intervene sooner than later. If you start to see signs of substance abuse, it seems like that would be a better time before it gets to the point where the person feels like they can't live without the substance. So I think, you know, for especially for adolescents, if you see your teenager, you know, doing drugs or alcohol and you're really concerned about them, it's good to kind of nip it in the bud as early as possible. I mean, there's a certain amount of experimentation that people kind of accept out of adolescents and young adults, but when you see that it's affecting their schoolwork or their work in general and their social relationships, if you can tell them, you know, clearly and honestly as early as possible, boy, I'm really concerned about what's going on with you and I want you to, you know, really take this seriously, then they know early on that you are concerned about them. And in a way, I think even though they resist it on the outside, on the inside they feel contained and they feel safer when they know that people around them care enough to say something unpopular like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's what it's all about because, you know, as the caller said, I'm so sorry, caller, if you're listening to me, I'm sorry, I don't know what happened. You may have gotten cut off or disconnected. But and I understand that it's very important for family to support each other, family and friends, because we do care about others and we don't want to see our loved ones go through anything that's going to be detrimental or destructive to their lives. And, you know, family is very important. It really, really is. And if you guys don't mind, I'm just going to take a quick commercial break here because what I'd like to do is I'd like to give our listeners a little preview of an upcoming show that we're going to have because it does talk about family values and how important it is and how much that does give a great foundation for your life. And I'm going to go ahead and play a quick promo. We're going to take a quick commercial break here and play a promo of an upcoming show we have, and I think you guys will like this a lot. We'll be right back.
She came into the world as a ward of the state. Today, she is an accomplished star of film and television. She delivers a touching tribute to the amazing women who raised her and to the foster care system that made it possible. I was never meant to be raised by one mother, but by many. Victoria Rowell.
I spent 18 years in foster care, and all of my mentors were so important to me.
What the critics are saying about the women who raised me. Rowell salutes her female mentors.
Someone took the time to teach me, and that person to me was champion. That person didn't laugh or express shock. They simply said, come here, honey, let me show you. And it's those mentors that make a difference in a person's life, whether you're in foster care or other.
The memoir, An Account of Rowell's Childhood in the Foster Care System and Beyond, is a testament to the women who guided her from birth. Miami Herald. The Women Who Raised Me, a memoir by Victoria Rowell, now available in paperback from the Amistad Division on HarperCollins. Pick up a copy from your local bookstore or order from Amazon.com.
So we're very excited about that. Victoria is a very special individual, and she's going to be on the show coming up soon to talk about her experiences and her family experiences. And I think it's very, very important that we all stick together when we do encounter a family member or a loved one that's going through something like that, that we pull together and try to help them. I mean, whether it works or not, then, you know, at least we can try. That's all we can do. Now, Dr.
Okay.
Lisa, I kind of wanted to ask you, too, about some of the – a lot of doctors, and this is not, you know, anything against doctors, but – a lot of doctors will prescribe prescription meds knowing that they are addictive. So why do they do that?
Well, I think that's an interesting question. I think there are times when doctors prescribe addictive medication like opiates and painkillers, and it can be entirely appropriate, like after surgery or if someone's really going through a lot of physical pain. But or, you know, people with anxiety disorders sometimes will benefit on a short term from having what are known as benzodiazepines, which are like Ativan and Klonopin and Valium. But the unfortunate thing is a lot of times people will who are addictive and have that tendency towards addiction will abuse those drugs. So they might get, you know, Vicodin for a pain in their back or after surgery, and then they'll have some left over and they'll be kind of, you know, struggling with, well, I know how it feels when I take that and it's really nice and I get to sleep easier and I don't think about, you know, so-and-so who left me. And, you know, so it can be really seductive to someone who has a substance use disorder to take them when they're not prescribed. And so I think it's a responsibility of both the person to recognize within themselves that they have that tendency and that they might abuse substances, and also for the doctor to ask about, do you have a substance abuse history before they prescribe it? And then, you know, what the doctor could do is if there's an alternative that isn't addictive, they might be able to do that, you know, prescribe that instead.
If you ask a person that question and they do have a substance abuse tendency or an addictive personality, and maybe you can explain a little bit to our listeners what an addictive personality, if they do possess that, they probably won't be honest with the doctor, don't you think? Because they're going to want those substances.
That's true. If they're in their addiction, there's a high chance that they will lie about it. Yeah, I guess I was thinking about people in recovery, you know, people who have already worked through, you know, admitting that they're an addict and have gone through that process. But yes, that is the danger, is that, you know, and I wish more doctors would kind of recognize that, you know, you don't just write out scripts for that kind of stuff freely. It's really important to check out with the person what, you know, to the extent that they will be honest. There's a certain amount of it that, you know, if a person doesn't want to tell you the truth, you can't do much about that. I think the doctor should at least ask about it.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Because I know I have been through situations of, there was a time in my life when I had quite a bit going on. My mother was sick, and then she ended up passing away, and I was in the process of getting a divorce, and just so many different things going on. And I did go to get help because I just really needed therapy. And the absolute first thing the doctor tried to do was prescribe medication for me. And I even told him that I would prefer not to do that, and he was pretty adamant about that's what he felt like I should do. And, you know, it was a addictive substance, and I was just not, I just was not willing to do that. So there,
it wasn't like an antidepressant or something like that. It was.
Pardon me?
I'm sorry. It wasn't an antidepressant or something like that. It was something that you.
It was more of a, I'm not sure all the medical terms, a benzodiazepine or.
Oh, benzodiazepine?
Yes. Something along
uh-huh.
that family. Exactly. I think
uh-huh.
it was Xanax or Valium or one of those. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's unfortunate that you went through that, because those can create a pretty rapid dependence if you don't watch it carefully.
Exactly. Now, let's talk about some of the methods and some of the resources that are available for people who want to be healed, who want help, mm-hmm. who are trying to go through the healing process, and they keep falling back and, you know, going back to their old behaviors. What are some of the resources and things that they can do to help them, or are there resources on your website, or are you aware of any websites? Or?
Sure, yeah. One thing I always want people to check out, because in part it's free and it's available all around the world, is 12-step programs. And I know that's not for everyone, but, you know.
Could you talk a little bit about the 12-step program? What does that consist of?
Okay, the 12-step programs were invented to help people. It's a spiritual solution for substance dependence and abuse, and it's basically what happens is people gather together, and the idea is that you don't have to say who you are. So you have a certain amount of anonymity. You know, you've all seen those on TV shows, I'm Bill W. and I'm an alcoholic or whatever. But the idea is that you have a place where everyone knows what you're going through, basically, because they're also in recovery and they're trying to get sober too. And so you go through 12 steps of recovery that help you kind of identify, A, that you're an addict, B, that you have had negative consequences as a result of your using, both for yourself and for other people. And it's sort of a way to kind of make it right with other people and yourself. And again, this is a gross oversimplification of it, but it's a really nice way to kind of be supported, because you have people who have been in the program longer than you, and they are able to kind of see through what a lot of therapists and doctors, et cetera, professionals often miss. You know, it takes an addict to know one. So, you know, people will be able to see if you're lying to them, and if you're kind of using magical thinking or creative thinking to get around admitting that you're having a negative impact on yourself. So that's something that I really encourage people to take part in. Also, groups for substance abuse, that is important for the same reason. And in therapy groups for substance abuse, you can have a lot more impact on someone who's struggling with addiction, because you have not just the therapist, but also all the other people, and they act as kind of mirrors. They show a mirror to you and show you what you're doing and the impact that it's having on other people. And that can be very helpful as well. But I've had quite a few people get sober with me when they were just abusing substances. And so, you know, sometimes individual therapy can help as well. But there are some websites that I wanted to mention. One is www.samhsa.gov. www.samhsa.gov. And that's the Substance Abuse Mental Health. It's a government organization that gives information and support for people who are struggling with both mental health and substance abuse issues. So that's a good resource. And also they have a Find Treatment. It's findtreatment.samhsa.gov. And there's also a national hotline that's 800-662-4357. And that's for people who are, it's like a hotline for people who are struggling with substance abuse.
Wonderful.
So, and there are 12-step programs for almost every process addiction, as well as, you know, substance abuse. So, you know, there's Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous, Gamblers Anonymous, Nicotine Anonymous. There's just all kinds of 12-step programs. So I hope that can be helpful to your
now
listeners.
Let me go ahead and put your website in our chat room, because we have quite a few people in the chat room, and I just want them to have access to your website.
Oh, okay. I have two websites. One is www.lisasslarson, and that's Larson with an E, .com, and then there's also www.yourtraumatherapist.com.
Okay, great. And let me just also ask you, Dr. Lisa, we understand the typical substance abuse and addiction situations like drugs, nicotine, gambling. What about the other not so popular ones like food
and sex and shopping, and, you know, the non-traditional situations that people find themselves in that can also be addicting. How could someone handle that?
How can someone handle it?
Those situations that are not, I mean, I'm sure there, I don't know if there are resources for Shoppers Anonymous or food problems.
There's Debtors Anonymous, and I'm not sure if there's one for compulsive spending, but I think that goes along with debting. And it's kind of harder with food and sex because those are certain things that, you know, kind of we naturally do. You know, we all need to eat, and I guess you could argue that we all need to have sex as well. But, and so, you know, complete abstinence might, you know, well, in the case of food, wouldn't work. So the solutions are a little harder with that because, you know, with drugs you can just say, okay, I don't need those in my life, I'm just going to cut them out. But the idea is sort of similar. You want to create a structure and support in your life so that you can recognize when you're starting to get into, you know, dangerous territory, and you know, before it gets there, do things to support yourself. And I know that sounds really vague, but in the case of sex and love addicts, a lot of times what happens is people objectify each other so that, you know, they see another person just as a means to an end. You know, and similarly, food can be a means to an end. It's not that you're really enjoying eating, you know, a gallon of ice cream, or that you're really enjoying having sex with a person. You're actually just using them to escape an uncomfortable feeling inside of yourself. So when you start to see yourself doing that, it's important to kind of, you know, A, get help, and B, learn to find another way to handle that uncomfortable feeling so that you're not using other people or food or whatever or spending to just escape and to have a wrong relationship with that substance or activity.
And so
go ahead, Tony.
I was just going to say, and so the key in those situations would be very similar. If your life changed drastically or your behaviors got into a non-traditional way of thinking and you started doing things just out of the realm of what you should do, then you know you're in trouble.
Yeah. So the way that you might know that you're getting into dangerous territory is that you can't seem to get enough of it. You can't seem to, you know, eat enough. You can't seem to have sex with enough people. You can't seem to spend enough. It always feels like you need to do more, or you need to do it more frequently than you intended to. Like, you might say, okay, you know, I'm just going to go out on a date with this person, and find yourself doing much more than you intended to. And then what happens is you feel bad about yourself when you've lost control over it, and then to deal with that feeling, you turn around and engage in the behavior all the more. And it creates a self-defeating cycle where you know, to deal with the shame, you're creating more shameful situations.
Gotcha.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to take a call. It looks like this caller has found a way to jump up and down and put a little star beside her name. So let me try to see if I can pull them on the air. Area code 208.
The last time you queued me in, you disconnected me, but that's okay.
Oh, I am so sorry. Was that you that I disconnected, caller?
Well, no, when the last time you noticed that I was on the line, and the last thing I heard is you queued me in and the line went dead, I said, oh, my goodness.
Oh,
your caller's great. Hi, this is Renee Alexopoulos. How are you? I finally made it live to your call.
Okay. Did you have a question?
I don't have a question. Okay. If it's okay, I'd love to comment on, you know, a change in addiction, especially with, you know, what you were talking about in regards to, you know, like food, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And mind you, this is my opinion, and I own it, so you don't have to take it. But basically, how I feel in regards to the food addiction, because clearly, I believe many people have them, and I believe it goes deeper than the food itself. I believe the food is the cover for what is happening within. And basically, it's kind of like when you go to a doctor and you have a symptom, they have to find the cause. And there's a cause that's deeper that they're feeding with food. And I just wanted to say that.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. I totally agree with that. We're winding down to the last 4 minutes, so I just wanted to make sure. Tony, did you have a question or?
No, I was just going to say, as far as the last caller, Doctor, you spoke a little bit earlier about the addictions and the abuses being a part of some bigger symptoms. Can you expand on that a little bit? Because the caller was kind of speaking toward that, and a lot of times people are using the addictions they for covering up something.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I've actually thought about that quite a bit. I don't think it's always necessarily, you know, something bad that happened to the person, but I think it's sort of a way of coping with one's feelings. And I look at it as a skill deficit a lot of times. I think a lot of people are not shown how to deal with negative feeling states or positive feeling states sometimes. And so they kind of look for something outside of themselves, whether it's food or sex or love or relationships or substances, to feel differently. And the problem with relying on something outside of yourself is that you can never get enough of it. You can never fill that void inside of yourself with enough of the, you know, outside substance. And so I think it does often speak to a deficit in self-management and tolerating negative feeling states. And so I think that's a lot of what recovery is aimed at, is learning how to cope with feeling and how to fulfill oneself and not look outside of oneself and not depend on things outside of oneself to make oneself feel worthy and good.
Right, absolutely. Great. And we're coming down to our last couple of seconds in the show, Dr. Lisa, and I want to thank you ever so kindly for joining us this evening. You have been a tremendous help for our listeners, and your information has been great. And just a final thought that I would like to say to all of our listeners, Dr. Lisa has given you some great information. She's given you some resources. I posted her website in the chat room. If you'd like to go to my website, which is www.chollowayhill.com, I also have information on how to get to Dr. Lisa's website. So please do that and give us your information that you need or comments that you'd like to make. And we want to thank everyone for listening to us and listening to our show and supporting us. We love you very much, and we have a lot of exciting show topics coming up. And we're going to sign off for now. Dr. Lisa, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Tony and I thank you guys for joining us.
Yes, we do.
I'm Kathy Holloway Hill.
And I'm Tony Lamont.
And we will see you here same time next week. We'll see you here same time next week on Blog Talk Radio. Good night, everyone.
Good night.